I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 17th of November. In the wake of high-profile incidents in Ferguson, Staten Island, Charleston, Baltimore, and here in Milwaukee, law enforcement agencies across the country are rapidly adopting body-worn cameras for officers. The Fire and Police Commission in Milwaukee approved a plan on October 15th that will require most Milwaukee police officers to wear body cameras at all times while on duty, although they won't be required to have the devices always activated. Our guests this hour have examined policies in 25 local police departments, evaluating them on 8 criteria, which were derived from their civil rights principles on body-worn cameras. Two of the authors of the report, titled Police Body-Worn Cameras, a Policy Scorecard, are with us. The report is from the Leadership Conference and Upturn. And our guests are Sakira Cook, a counsel in the Public Policy Department of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, and the Leadership Conference Education Fund. It is a coalition charged by its diverse membership of more than 200 national organizations to promote and protect the civil and human rights of all persons in the country. Sakira, thank you very much for joining us this hour. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Harlan Yu is also with us, co-founder of Upturn in Washington, D.C. It's worked with major civil rights organizations to address technology's impact on social justice, built software for the U.S. House, and working to make the legislative process more efficient, and helped Rock the Vote advocate for a more durable approach to online voter registration. Harlan Yu, thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Tell me, just generally, as we look across the country, are most police departments going to cameras for law enforcement officers, or is it just a few at this point?
Yeah, across the country, what we're hearing is that this is one of the biggest trends in policing right now. I think it's fair to say that within a couple of years, almost all police departments, certainly all the major police departments, will have body-worn cameras on officers on patrol. Based on our study of the 15 largest departments in the country, nearly all of them are thinking about, have piloted, or already do have body-worn cameras on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And is this directly a result of these high-profile incidents we've seen in Ferguson and Charleston and Staten Island and Milwaukee and other places? Is it a response to that?
I mean, certainly.
Harlan. Yes, I think that certainly there willingness to address issues of transparency and accountability in policing, and to do that by using body cameras, is a direct result of some of these high-profile cases and a feeling of many in the African American community and other communities of color that there's a serious breakdown between police and our communities, and there's a serious mistrust. Mm-hmm. And in order to address that, one of the ways that we can do so is to provide a little bit more accountability and transparency. And this can be one of the tools to address that.
I have read that there have been some communities, I think there was one in Rialto, California, the location of the first controlled experiment about the effects of body cameras. They must have done it the right way. We'll talk about the problem areas. But it slashed the use of force, I read, by half, and complaints about police by 90%.
Yeah, body cameras certainly show some promise. Obviously, that's just one trial in one department, and the dynamics of, you know, police and communities are different in different areas. So, you know, certainly there's potential here for cameras to improve the situation on the ground. You know, oftentimes supporters of body cameras talk about the quote-unquote the civilizing effect that it has on both officers and the individuals who are being recorded. But at the same time, I think what the Leadership Conference and the rest of the coalition is pointing out here is that it's not just those effects that are important. In the future, body-worn cameras may be used as just another tool for accountability, where it records significant amounts of footage in communities that can be used to further prosecute and further police communities of color.
The report says that accountability is not automatic when body cams are used. What do you mean by that, Secure?
Well, basically, if you have a clear understanding of the rules of how the policy should operate, you have to also have clear disciplinary rules, right? And it's not always clear within any of these policies what the disciplinary action is for someone who violates the policy. So that's one thing. The second thing is, it's not just about use of cameras to address issues of excessive use of force or police misconduct or even racial profiling. I mean, there are a plethora of other policy discussions that we need to have around how policing is done in these communities, ways that we can address implicit bias through training in communities, to have serious and direct bans on racial profiling by police officers in communities of color. There are other tools of accountability, policy mechanisms that need to be put in place to also address accountability. So that's what we mean, that it's not just the cameras. This is not a one-size-fit-all approach. Mm-hmm. We also have to look at other policy debates and discussions and mechanisms that should be put in place with regards to addressing implicit bias, addressing racial profiling, addressing excessive use of force.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing that we decided to do extensively is body cams, and the other areas need further exploration and action?
Well, definitely action. I mean, I think for the leadership conference, we have been working on a piece of legislation that has been in Congress for the last over 12 years, the End Racial Profiling Act, that would make it clear that racial profiling is banned and also require data collection to ascertain the extent to which police investigatory stops of citizens is disproportionately impacting certain communities. We know this through anecdote and other data that we gather here and there, but there is no systematic way for us to collect this data. With regards to excessive use of force, folks have been calling for national data collection on shootings, on officer-involved shootings or officer killings of citizens. We do not now collect that data. So that's another policy solution that we can put in place right now. So, I mean, I don't think that for us, some of this has already been studied. Some of this we already know the solutions that we need to put in place, but we aren't having a dialogue in addition to the dialogue around body cameras, around those policy solutions that can also help to protect communities and build stronger relationships.
You've been working on this for 12 years? That's a long time.
Yes. The leadership conference has been working on the issue of racial profiling, along with others in our coalition, for over 12 years, and trying to pass this particular piece of legislation that would provide, in our opinion, concrete rules around policing and interactions with police and communities of color that tend to be overly surveilled and policed.
Mm-hmm. Harlan, you looked in this report at 25 local police departments. You evaluated them on 8 criteria. What were the criteria?
Right. So in May of 2015, the Leadership Conference and a coalition of civil rights, privacy, and media rights groups put together a set of principles on body-worn cameras, civil rights principles on body-worn cameras that you mentioned at the top of the show. After those principles were released, we realized that the next step was to look at how those principles were or were not being followed in the major departments across the country. So in putting the scorecard together, what we did was we came up with 8 different criteria derived from the civil rights principles and then evaluated each department's policy on each of those 8 criteria on a 3-level scale, either red if they failed on that particular criteria, yellow if they met it, halfway, and green if, they fully satisfied the criteria. So the 8 criteria broadly look at various aspects of how body-worn cameras may or may not be protective of civil rights. As you were saying, you're asking about, what does it mean when we say accountability is not automatic? Just because a police department decides to buy and field body-worn cameras onto the streets, it doesn't necessarily mean that now we have accountability into those interactions. The specific policy details here matter a lot as to whether or not it's just going to be another tool for injustice or it's actually going to provide some measure of accountability. So, you know, among the eight criteria, the most fundamental, the most basic, is making to public policy available. We see a lot of departments, including in Milwaukee, where it's actually very difficult to locate the policy if you're a member of the public, to even begin to have the discussion about what the policies around cameras are. Among the other criteria that we use, we looked at officer discretion, you know, when officers can and can't turn off their cameras, including for personal privacy reasons. We looked at when officers are able to actually view the footage in the process of writing the reports or during investigations. We also looked at various aspects of footage retention, how long departments keep the footage around for, whether or not there are policies around footage deletion and editing and who can do that. And then importantly also, we looked at when members of the public are able to access footage, right? This is a key piece of accountability.
Sure.
If members of the public can't get access, well, what accountability are we even talking about? So we looked in particular at whether complainants, people who were filing police complaints specifically, would have access to the relevant footage in the process of filing a complaint. And then lastly, we also looked at whether or not departments are limiting the use of biometric technologies. So here we're talking about facial recognition technologies, voice recognition technologies, and even some of the more advanced technologies like tattoo analysis or gait analysis, where you can analyze an individual based only on, you know, the individual kind of signature of how somebody walks. It might be surprising, but it's certainly possible to identify individuals uniquely using many of these techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think that, you know, if body-worn cameras are to be a tool for accountability, the use of these additional technologies in conjunction with footage should be sharply limited.
What about, let me just ask a basic question. In Milwaukee, police officers, and this will be by the end of next year, will be required to wear body cameras at all times while on duty, although they will not be required to have the devices always activated. What are the plans among police departments all over the country, and what are your ideas on this? When should they always be activated? Should it be up to the discretion of the officer when something will be taped? I mean, it seems like a fuzzy policy. Sakura?
Well, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, for us, we want police departments to commit to a set of narrow and well-defined purposes for the camera and then specify clear operational policies for recording, retention, and access. And with regards to recording, there are clear exemptions, right, for when the officer can turn the camera off, right, in situations which we believe are appropriate, in situations where there's a minor being interviewed or maybe a sexual assault victim or a domestic violence victim, and that's appropriate. But not having a clear policy in place around when to actually have the camera on in order to collect the information that we are deeming that is appropriate to collect, the interactions that police officers have with community members, which can, we know in many cases, a simple conversation on the street can escalate at any point in time, and not having a clear frame of time for when the officer has to turn that camera on when they are engaging with the community is too much of a gray area for us. You know, we believe that the cameras, officers should have on their bodies, the cameras that they are on, that are on their bodies should be in the on position, and that there should be exceptions or exemptions for when the camera should be off. And that's with any, interaction that they have with community members. And then they should also notify community members that they are recording when they are having this interaction. And if someone requests to be off of camera, then they can have the discretion to turn that off with that request. But other than that, we have to be able to catch the types of interactions that we are deeming that we want to be able to catch on camera. And in order to do that, we have to have a clear policy about turning the camera on. If they only have to turn it on when they deem it is appropriate, we may miss something that could be critical in the situation between an officer and a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And looking specifically at the Milwaukee policy, they do seem to have at least a reasonable policy requiring officers to record, quote, all investigative or enforcement contacts with the relatively specific list of 12 situations in which officers must record. And so I think that actually gives pretty good guidance to officers about what's expected, at least in terms of when the camera must be on. I think the issue that Sakira mentioned about personal privacy and how much discretion officers have in certain sensitive situations is of some concern. So the Milwaukee policy, prohibits officers from recording, quote, in places where a reasonable expectation of privacy exists, but also notes that, you know, in certain sensitive situations, it specifically provides examples, you know, victims of sexual assault, child victim statements, interviews, and nude persons who are not the target of an enforcement action. In those sensitive situations, the Milwaukee PD gives its officers full discretion over when to record. So there's no requirement to notify these victims that the camera is on, even if it's that person is in a state of undress. There's no obligation for an officer to turn the camera off, even if the victim requests that an officer turn the camera off.
Well, certainly the legality of that has to be questioned, doesn't it? Won't it?
Well, I'm unclear. I mean, I think it's just up to department policy.
Mm-hmm.
When the camera needs to be on and off in these sensitive situations. I'm not aware of any law that, you know, if there are victims, you know, in state of undress in a public place, that an officer would be forbidden from recording. But certainly from a civil rights perspective, you know, we're talking about domestic violence incidents,
right,
or, you know, sexual assault incidents. There certainly should be times in which the camera should really be off and the camera should not be recording.
Mm-hmm.
And on this point, I mean, just to add one other thing, that it also speaks to our principles around developing the camera policies in public and with the community's input. I mean, I think that's an important point around the Milwaukee policy. There have been several news articles that have talked about how community members feel that on this point of when the camera should be on and off, there hasn't been enough community engagement, that there hasn't been enough dialogue and discussion about what that should look like. And in our opinion, it's important for the police department to take that into consideration as it develops their policies.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about a report just released, Police Body Worn Cameras, a Policy Scorecard, done by the Leadership Conference and Upturn. And we are speaking with two of the report's authors this hour. They looked at 25 local police departments all over the country, evaluating them on 8 criteria. Milwaukee is one of those because Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission did pass an ordinance saying that cams will be used, and the mayor has asked for all police officers to have them in use by the end of 2016. Most Milwaukee police officers will be wearing them now, although they won't be required to have the devices always activated. And the Milwaukee policy calls for discretion when sexual assault victims or child victims are interviewed. The idea, of course, there was a call for these body cams after all of these police actions that turned violent in places like Charleston and Staten Island and certainly Ferguson. Ferguson doesn't score very well on their report of 25 communities. We'll talk about how they scored, which communities scored well, and if this is just a small part or is it a large part of holding police accountable, trying to end racial profiling in this country and trying to end incidents of violence. There are other areas that Sakira, one of our guests, says need scrutiny as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And we have lines open for you right now, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we always like to read your messages. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we're welcoming phone calls. A number of them are coming in now. And Jeffrey in West Central Wisconsin is our first caller for you. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Go right ahead, sir.
One of the big things that community and people do not look at when dealing with body cameras is that most police officers do want body cameras. They help out tremendously, investigations, stuff like that. But the cost not only of the camera, but of the data storage. I personally work for a small department, which is not a huge deal. But cities like Milwaukee, where you have 200 officers on per shift, the amount of data storage that costs is astronomical. And most computer systems and servers aren't capable of handling this kind of storage.
Harlan, you want to take that?
Yeah, thanks for that comment. That's certainly true. I mean, what we're seeing is that the cameras themselves may cost a few hundred dollars, but the real cost on police departments is going to be the ongoing storage and maintenance of all the footage. We're talking about, an 8 to 12 hour shift for an officer. That's, almost that many hours of footage that will need to be stored and cataloged and later made searchable and retrievable. From the civil rights perspective, cost is certainly a concern. Many, from what I'm hearing in the civil rights community, many think that, this isn't the best use of police department funds or city funds or taxpayer money in general, that they are expensive and they don't address, the core criminal justice concerns that we've talked about before. So certainly cost is an issue. Both for the departments and for taxpayers as well.
Sakura, you agree?
Oh, I would definitely agree. We have taken the position at the leadership conference that should departments make the choice to implement a body-worn camera program, they should do so with a keen eye to implementation and rolling this out in a very deliberate process, maybe starting with a pilot program to see how that works, and also should, of course, adhere to our civil rights principles on the use of body-worn cameras, because we want to ensure that the transparency and accountability that we seek is actually what takes place. There's a temptation to make a false equivalence with citizen recorded videos and what body worn cameras will do that are operated by law enforcement. And we have to be really clear that the camera will be focused on the community, right? And not necessarily on the officer. So ensure that, yes, this could provide a tool of accountability, but there are also other things that should be put in place and other resources that departments should be using their funds, other policies that departments could be using their resources towards to improve policing as well.
Mm-hmm. The mayor's budget, tell me what you think of these numbers. By the end of 2016, and evidently Milwaukee's pace, according to news accounts, is outstripping other large police departments that are using the technology. The estimated cost of the body cameras and video storage is $880,000 in 2016 and about $1 million a year beginning in 2017. Those are not definite budget figures, but preliminary budget figures. Does that strike you as high, Harlan, or worth the cost?
Well, it's a lot of money. I think the question is, what other programs could perhaps be perhaps better serve the community with that money. Certainly education programs, job programs. It's not clear that $1 million a year on body cameras is the right investment for communities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jeffrey, for your call. Richard in Madison is next. Hi, Richard. Richard, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I was just getting ready to turn my radio down.
Okay, go right ahead.
I guess I'm on right next. Hi, how are you?
Good, Richard. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Good. Very well, thanks. I love this show.
Thanks.
So two things. In a couple of instances where, talking about costs, where people have ended up on death row and some people have actually been executed to later find out that, things weren't quite the way they were said to be, what's the cost of that? But the point I was going to make is that it's interesting that with cases now that we're seeing more and more where people, where there's video camera evidence because people have recorded something on their phone and stuff like that, and all of a sudden you have DAs dropping cases, police officers being found having used excessive force and stuff like that. Things that in cases when they went to court, generally, the officer's word is taken as sacrosanct. I mean, no one can question that, but yet the individual who's being charged is. So the use of video cameras should really benefit actually both people, both cases, both the officers and the public. But generally what's starting out is it seems that it's the public who's going to benefit more than the police officers. So that's my comment, and I'd love to hear.
Thank you, Richard. Sakira.
Well, Richard, that's certainly our hope. Our hope is that these, again, will be used as instruments of accountability and transparency and will help to protect the public and also bridge the gap between communities and police. We, you know, all police, our officers are not bad. This isn't an indictment of police at all. But I think that there's a recognition that there are things that are broken within our communities and the relationships between police and our communities, and that we have to address those things. So we have to be able to account for what is actually taking place, and technology is one way that we can sort of account for that breakdown. If something is caught on camera, it's not one person's word against the other person. We can, to some extent, have some video evidence of what appears to have taken place. You can't always determine what actually took place from video, but something is also there to add to the conversation. So it is our hope that, as you say, this is going to actually protect communities and provide more accountability.
We haven't. I'm sorry.
This is another area where you know, the details of the policies matter. I mean, Richard brings up a great point about officer credibility in the courtroom versus the credibility of other witnesses. You know, one of the factors that we studied in this report was, when officers are allowed to view footage and whether that happens before or after writing an initial report. So, you know, officers and police unions say, you know, what we want are accurate reports, and, you know, we want accurate reports as well. You know, footage can help everyone gain, you know, more clear an accurate understanding of how a particular incident unfolded. But what we fear is that body cameras might actually create an undue advantage or an uneven playing field. And, you know, the reason for this is that, you know, if officers are allowed to view the footage of an incident before writing his or her report, then that report is going to be far more accurate and perhaps far more credible than other witness statements. Right. I mean, imagine it from the other side. You know, you have a prosecutor or investigator who wants to get a statement from a witness. It's highly unlikely that that investigator would say, you know, I want to get the most accurate statement from you as possible. Please watch the footage of the incident first and then give me your statement. What a prosecutor would do would be to get that statement first and then cross-check against what the video showed. So. We think that this should be true for officers as well, where, you know, officers might have a two-step process where officers first file an initial report that has the officer's recollection of what happened and what he or she experienced. And then there's a secondary step of watching the footage and then filing perhaps an amendatory statement if necessary that might reconcile any differences or any new detail that the video jogged in terms of the officer's memory. So, you know, the specific policy here actually matters a lot in terms of, you know, whether body camera footage is going to enhance accountability or whether it's just going to be another tool for over-prosecution because it makes officer statements more credible.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look just a little bit before we go back to many phone calls. When you looked at the 25 cities, Ferguson fared among the worst. It was the worst in all of the criteria. How so?
Well, among the eight criteria, Ferguson's policy rated red, which was that the policy either did not address the particular civil rights concern or had a policy that directly contradicted what we thought a good policy ought to be. You know, Ferguson, among the 25 departments we studied, Ferguson's policy was the only one that scored a red on all 8 criteria. And it's just a very short policy that doesn't seem very well thought out as compared to the other departments that we looked at.
And the best?
It's hard to say. You know, one of the purposes of the scorecard, one of the goals, is to help departments improve their policies. There isn't a policy out there that's perfect. You know, even the departments that are doing very well still have lots of room for improvement. So, you know, one of the goals here is to help departments look at, toward their peers for policy language, especially in areas where that department is faltering. So, you know, we see lots of departments where they're great in one area but then falter in another. So what we're hoping to do with the scorecard is to have departments be able to find policy language and to improve their policies over time. Mm-hmm. And I guess I should add before, just for your listeners, that if they want to check out the scorecard for themselves, it's online. If you go to bwcscorecard.org, that's BWC, which stands for Body Worn Cameras, scorecard.org, you can check out you know, how your city, how Milwaukee scored, and how other cities mm-hmm. across the country fared.
Thanks very much, Richard, for your call. Jake in Twin Lakes, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Jake.
I just kind of wanted to point out a different kind of perspective on it. Not only can these body cameras help with racial profiling and other different serious offenses, but it can also help in just the small-time cases where you have a he-said-she-said situation, and you can just say, okay, well, the officer says one thing, the citizen says the other, why don't we just take a look at the body camera and see who's right?
Sakura.
Well, I think I don't know that we can make a conclusion that what the video shows is actually going to clear up any differences in opinion with both sides. But I think it does provide an independent account of the incident and can help to sort of broaden or round out whatever other information and evidence that is collected around an incident. But, you know, footage can be misleading and it can be incomplete. So other sources of evidence, like the officer's own independent recollection of the incident, as well as the citizen's independent recollection of the incident, as well as what other footage might have captured another angle of the incident, whether it's footage on a camera, on a lamppost, or from a citizen video, you know, it's just the idea that having some other evidence in addition to people's independent recollections of what happened helps us in better determining what happened and what we can do better in certain circumstances.
I'm sure that there are different policies among all of these 25 different departments, but I, what is the policy in terms of you get off your shift, you've had the camera on maybe for most of the day, who looks at it? Do you report what's on the camera? Do you report an arrest? Do you report where you were? Do you report what happens with all of that video? Or is if there was nothing that the officer says is of consequence, is it erased or is it all kept?
Right. So the Milwaukee standard operating procedure on body worn cameras, as you know, that was just approved last month, has a portion here that is all about, you know, data uploading and video categorization. So, you know, officers do need to, you know, tag the video if there's, say, an incident number or report written, just so, you know, later in the process, you know, if there is an investigation or a trial, it becomes easy to go back and to find the relevant footage. So, you know, there is some process for officers who are in the best position to kind of identify the snippets of video of importance to tag that video. As far as retention, the Milwaukee Police Department specifies various retention minimums for when, for how long video needs to be kept around for. For critical incidents, you know, for uses of force, videos need to be preserved for at least 3 years from the date of recording. For, you know, incidents that are more mundane, that have, you know, no police action taken, that video is preserved for 130 days. But one part of footage retention that we looked at in our scorecard is all about automated deletion. You know, for the most part, you know, I would say, you know, 99% of all video footage that that's recorded should probably never be seen by a human, right? It's mundane footage of no real importance. And, you know, for privacy reasons in particular, you know, we might be worried that a nefarious insider or a hacker might get access to, you know, some of the sensitive footage. You know, we think, and also for cost reasons, we think it's important for departments to automatically delete footage after a certain amount of time. And I think that's one area where the Milwaukee Police Department could really improve is that while they specify minimums for how long video can be kept around for, they don't specify any maximum durations in which footage must be deleted.
Mm-hmm. Sakura, you want to weigh in on this?
I think Harlan covered it.
Okay. We'll welcome more phone calls in just one moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're talking about a report just released in November by the Leadership Conference and Upturn Police Body-Worn Cameras, a Policy Scorecard. They looked at 25 local police departments in the country and evaluated them and their policies on police cameras on eight different areas. And we're talking about that and also looking at the issue of racial profiling, if body cams are going to lessen police force that is used, particularly in minority communities, if there are other things that need to take place. And we have two guests with us here, and welcoming your phone calls for both of them. Our guests are joining us from the Public Policy Department of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, and that is Sakura Cook. It's a coalition that has a membership of more than 200 national organizations, the mission to promote and protect the civil and human rights of all persons in the U.S. Harlan Yu is co-founder of Upturn in Washington. They've worked with major civil rights organizations to address technology's impact on social justice. So we'll take more phone calls in just a little while on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Sakura, let me ask you this question. You were talking about some other areas that needed to be addressed and haven't been, even though you've been working on them for years, like racial profiling. When this issue in Milwaukee about body cams was being discussed at an open hearing, Milwaukee area attorney Robin Shello, who represents a number of the people who have filed civil rights suits against the city and the police department alleging improper strip and cavity searches, her response was, yes, I believe in body cameras, but more importantly, I think we should have police officers with college educations. I think that would do a lot more to reduce unconstitutional interactions. What do you think of that?
Well, that is a subject of debate that has been something that I've been hearing more recently. Recently, the White House convened its task force on 21st century policing, and they held a number of hearings on various areas of policing, and that was one of the areas, looking at the education level of police officers and what that education level should be. I mean, there were people on both sides saying that at least some college education, whether it's an associate degree or a four-year education, is necessary in addition to a high school diploma, and there were others that were saying, no, we need more training, right? That we need more, that the police officers need more training around the law and specified training while they're in the academy around constitutional protections and the like. So I think this is a healthy debate. I think the more that we can educate members of our community as well as the police around their rights, you know, that will help us further build better relationships between police officers and the communities they serve. We have to remind ourselves that police are human beings, right? They are
sure.
members of our community as well. So I think there may be something in that we can find compromise in between both. But in the interim, if we don't move to a system where police are required to have a certain level of education, definitely training and more training around civil rights protections that they should be aware of for communities that they serve, as well as their rights, is important.
Let's go next to Wanda in Fond du Lac. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I had a quick question. I was just curious. I know, like, if something happens and you go to the police department and you need a police report, you can get that. Would you or will they soon be able to give you that video also of your interaction with the police? So, I mean, if something, like, per se would happen and you wanted to go to the lawyers or whatever to seek help, and, I mean, would you be able to have, would the public be able to get part of that video?
Harlan?
Yeah, I mean, what you describe is critical for accountability. Unfortunately, in many departments, including in Milwaukee, police departments have punted to state records laws, public access laws, where you'd have to there's no special process for a complainant to get access to the footage of the interaction, but you could file a public records request for that particular snippet of footage. We know that oftentimes those processes are slow and they get bogged down, so that can be frustrating. And so one of the criteria that we studied these camera programs on was on footage access. So, in Washington, D.C., there is a process where a complainant can go to a district station, fill out a form, attesting that, if there's a particular time and place and maybe the officer's name, where the complainant could watch, in the presence of a police officer, what that footage is, in hopes of being able to decide whether or not to go further in the complaint process. So, this is an area where certainly we hope to see Milwaukee improve, in an area that we hope to see other departments around the country, copy, some of the practices, better practices that we see in jurisdictions across the country. Well,
we don't know the intricacies of this case, so I'm just, but the point will be one that's important. Caitlin sends an email. My cousin had his shoulder separated by the Green Bay Police Department and can no longer work. When the video was shown in court, the footage of him being taken down had been totally deleted. The only part of the video that was left was him being pulled over. Sakura?
Again, this goes right to our points on the civil rights principles. Specify clear operational policies for recording, retention, and access. We want to ensure that the video is maintained, especially video that shows incidences of use of force incidences or where someone was injured by a police officer, that video is captured and retained by the department, probably for a longer period than your regular investigatory incidences that might, be caught on camera, incidences that encounters police may have during their beat, but definitely incidences that involve use of force or a complaint that is filed by a citizen against the police department, as well as, if there's a shooting or someone is seriously injured and there is video to show that, that video should have a separate retention policy that allows for a period of time that is in accordance with the rules of evidence so that it can be evaluated at a later point should there be a complaint brought forth and some sort of litigation that arises from it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and this is one of the weaknesses too of the Milwaukee policy as it currently stands is that right now the policy that was approved last month prohibits unauthorized access and copying of the footage, but there's actually nothing in the policy that expressly prohibits members of the department from modifying or deleting or otherwise tampering mm-hmm. with footage. You know, I have no reason to believe that, you know, they were actually trying to allow that. But the fact that the policy is missing that specific language that clearly prohibits that, I think, is concerning. I'll also add here that, you know, the Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission recently put out a frequently asked questions about body-worn cameras on October 14th. You can find the document online. And in that document, they claim that, you know, basically no one can edit the original video and that there are protections in place to prevent deletion. But that's actually inconsistent, and I wasn't able to find actually in the policy itself language that actually provided those protections. So I think those are some concerns that I think the community in Milwaukee ought to raise with the police department there.
Thanks, Wanda, for the call. Will in DeForest. Hi.
Yes, thank you. My question is on the same lines. There was a police shooting in 207 where an officer shot a man in the chest with an AR-15, and that video was not released for the public to see, not even with the media's request. And the excuse that the chief gave was that if the video is shown, it could put the police computers at risk. And I'm asking, is that possible, that it would put it at risk just if the public is able to view a video of a police shooting?
Secure.
No, certainly not. I mean, certainly there are ways of, you know, making a copy of the footage and, you know, putting it up on the evening news or, you know, distributing the video online in some other way. But I think that concern is valid. I mean, this is true for many police departments. You know, even in places where this footage is public record. So, you know, take, for example, California. All body-worn camera footage are public records. Unfortunately, because of the exemptions that exist in the Public Records Act, all footage is also categorized as an investigatory record, which means that departments don't ever have to release footage unless they want to or unless they decide to. So, you know, this is certainly a concern. If all of this footage is being captured, who has access? And unfortunately, what we're seeing across the country is that, you know, complainants and the community really needs the footage, access isn't provided and is not available.
You mentioned at the beginning of the show all the other things that need to be done, Sakura. What needs to be done right now? Do we need a lot more training on racial profiling? What is most important?
I think you're right. Yes, definitely. First and foremost, we need to, at every level, federal, state, and local, address issues of racial profiling. This is a huge issue that not only impacts the African-American community or Latino community, also impacts Muslims and Arabs and other South Asian communities since the 9/11 attacks. So this is something that the federal government has somewhat addressed, but I think that state and local law enforcement agencies must also take a hard look at their policies around racial profiling. If they do not have a policy, a clear ban and clear protocols around racial profiling, they must implement those. So that's first. Second, we do not have a national standard on use of force. We must have clear guidelines that all police officers across the country must follow when engaging with the community, and if a incident arises to a level where force is necessary, clear limitations on how much force is necessary in those instances, and training around use of force, as well as implicit and explicit racial bias training of law enforcement officers. These are members of the community. We all come to this world and in our experiences develop certain biases, and we have to acknowledge that and also train ourselves against those biases. So that's also important. And finally, I would say data collection. We cannot purely state the extent of a problem unless we study that problem. And the way that we are able to study the problem is through data collection. So data collection around racial profiling, specifically stops, arrests, and other investigatory practices with state and local law enforcement, mm-hmm. as well as data collection on use of force incidences, how many result in death, and interactions between police officers.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We're out of time. Thank you both very much. A very informative hour. Sakura Cook, counsel in the Public Policy Department at the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Harlan Yu, co-founder of Upturn in Washington, D.C. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News coming up, we'll return.